Hello, and welcome to Couple Power, a series of podcasts about lifelong love and making your relationships work. I'm Dr. Peter Sherris. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I'm here with...
Phyllis Cott Sherris. I'm also a clinical psychologist and married to Peter.
And together we've been working with couples for probably 3 decades, and we've been a couple ourselves for over 34 years. So we want to spend a little time today in today's podcast talking about what most people think to be the cornerstones of a good relationship, and that's communication. Time and again, we work with couples who say that their communication is not very good, and that if it were only better, then their relationship would be better.
But what we have found, actually, is that communication is not the key, or at least it's not the first step. As we said earlier in another podcast, the really cornerstone and first step is commitment. And without that, no matter how much you learn to communicate, you might be actually sometimes making things worse.
Once you learn to say what you really think and have the other person hear it, sometimes the stuff that comes out isn't all that refreshing and and light in nature. It's usually like, well, here's what I've always wanted to tell you that I haven't been able to tell you for years. And that works fine if it's in a context that you're really going to be working things out. So as we often say, that commitment to work on the relationship is necessary before you embark on good communication.
And also a commitment to something that you're taking on together. As a couple, we talk about couple as one, that you're committed to create something that works for both of you. And once you come from there, then communication can be effective.
So often we work with couples in taking something on together, really practicing how their relationship works. So in addition to commitment, the next step we often take in working with couples is the step we call cooperation.
And cooperation means working together, co-operating, just what the word says, operating together. And that means learning to work together as a team. And once you know what you're working for, that's the commitment, what your vision is that you're both committed to, then it's not as hard as some people might think to work together for that goal.
And so often couples get together with a vision of being married or being in a relationship or having a family, but that vision doesn't stay very clear for them. So when they think about what it is that they're up to together right now, sometimes they don't have a very good image of what that's like. So if you want to cooperate, you really, as Phyllis said, need to have a project or something you want to cooperate about. The kids, the house, the garage, the basement, something like that.
Yeah, so that you have some idea what path you're on together. Commitment's important, but you want to know commitment for what? And that's what cooperation can help you do, is getting together on the same page as a team, knowing what you're working towards.
We find it really interesting that most couples, when they get in a relationship, or this is true of families, to think that they're pretty good at cooperating. If I asked you, you good at cooperating with other people? Most people will say, yeah. Sometimes they're not so good at it, but I'm particularly good at it. And, you know, it takes two to cooperate. So we often find that we're not, any of us, quite as good as we thought we were. And the good news about that is cooperation is a skill, like skiing or playing tennis or hitting a baseball. It's something that you can learn if you're committed to learning it.
For example, when we first got married, we thought we could learn to cooperate by dividing up the tasks that we had to do, the household tasks at home. And we had everything perfectly divided, 50-50, and Peter would do his tasks and I would do mine, and they actually were working for a while, and then we saw, no, some of the tasks were really harder than other tasks. So we started to weight them, and even then it didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, it just turned out that I had all the harder things to do.
No, that was not it.
I was vacuuming, so. Phyllis was watering the plants, I was doing the grocery shopping, and she was dusting.
Okay,
we're not going to see the point.
This is where our arguments would go. So finally, we realized that nothing was going to work out perfectly what we would call fair for each of us, that we each had our own opinions, and that what was most important is that we got clear together as a team what we wanted to have done in the house. And then we looked at, okay, well, like, who's better at one thing than another? Like, you know, if Peter was in charge of the plants, they would probably all die. You know, so even though maybe...
And you were particularly good at dusting, I think, I must say.
Yeah, right. So we looked at who was better at some things than others, and who really liked certain things better than others, who had more time for certain things than others. And even though it didn't look like 50-50 perfectly matched, we found out that by that kind of cooperation, things were working much better.
And if you think about it, there's a certain feeling you get when you've accomplished something together, regardless of what you've taken on. It's a time to kick back, congratulate each other, and look at your handiwork and see what you've done. And it really gives you a feeling of accomplishment as an entity, as a couple, or as a family.
Yeah, and speaking of accomplishing it and acknowledging that, we want to make sure that one of the pieces of communication that's important is that we do acknowledge each other for what you have done. So if Peter does take up the garbage and that's his job, it still really helps if I acknowledge him for doing that. And sometimes I actually remember to do that.
And this is the key about this. This is a really, if we ever had any tips for good relationships, this would be a good one, because acknowledgement is really cheap. I mean, it's not very expensive. But to be able to say that you appreciate someone's contribution makes it much more likely they're going to contribute and gives you a different kind of feeling. And it's also important in cooperating that you begin to see you are deciding to do something together, and that doesn't really constitute compromise. So many people in relationships are concerned that if you're going to be in a relationship, you're going to have to give something up, you're going to have to compromise in some way, and that you might lose yourself. When you cooperate, you take something on together. So it's not it's not really compromise. It's actually inventing something to do together.
Yeah, because in compromise, somebody's going to have to give something up, if not both of you. And eventually, after a while, that compromise ends up in resentment. With cooperation, we keep going until we find some way that it works for both of us and for the couple as a whole. And that's where cooperation is the key. So first you have to be committed, then you're committed to cooperate and work as a team, and that's when communication can be really useful, because you're using the communication to forward what you're both willing to accomplish together as a team.
Imagine if you're climbing a mountain together or painting a room together, that it's really helpful to know what the other person is doing. So communication becomes extremely important and extremely useful when that's the purpose that it has. And when you begin to communicate in that way, you begin to trust that communicating actually makes things better rather than worse. Because what happens in a lot of couples is it's that we don't communicate, we don't communicate, we don't communicate, and then we do communicate. And by then it's like too late, or there's a lot of resentment built up.
So what we advocate is what we call committed speaking and committed listening. So again, it comes from that context of what we're both committed to together to create as a couple. Couple is one, is what still drives our communication. So when I speak, I'm still committed to that vision. If I'm committed to, you know, winning the argument or being right or making him wrong, that's not going to work. But if I am speaking from that commitment, our joint commitment, then communication is the key to having our life work.
And the other side of that is listening. How do we actually listen to other people? For me, usually when someone speaks to me or when Phyllis has something to say, she hasn't said very much before I'm already thinking about how I'm going to respond. Either I'm going to defend myself, or I'm going to tell her that what she feels isn't true or is not appropriate. And the minute I start thinking about that, I'm no longer listening to what she has to say. And if you remember what it's like to speak with someone who really hears what you have to say, it's important. Maybe it first happens when you're a teenager and you make a best friend. Someone sleeps over and all of a sudden you realize, wow, we say the same things. We think the same things. That's what it can be like in a relationship. But it involves really listening first and then speaking.
So an exercise, a little thing you might try together, is something that we call five and five. So for 5 minutes, I get to speak and Peter just listens. And at the end of that time, you can add in a piece of what we call feedback, saying back to the person what you heard them say. Mm-hmm. Not trying to fix anything, not trying to give advice, just let them know you heard what they said.
So she says, I was really angry about what this person did and I didn't understand. I could ask a question to clarify what she meant, but not to make it better or change it in any way, just to make sure that if she weren't there, I could repeat it back in a way that was faithful to how she originally said it.
Yeah, and then it gives me the experience of having really been heard and listened to without being interrupted, without being told that I did it wrong or even right, just being heard. And if you think about it, how many times do we have that experience? So after 5 minutes, and you'd be surprised about how long 5 minutes can be or feel like when you're really listened to and not being interrupted. And then after that, then
Switch. And then you get a five minutes to say exactly what's there for you. And at the end of that, that's the end of the exercise. You can speak some more about it if you want, but it's not really required. What is required is that during the 5 and 5, you listen to exactly what's being said without formulating a response, without judging it, without putting in your opinion or giving your advice or saying what the other person should have said or might have said or how they ought to respond. And then you get the opportunity to be heard like that as well yourself. So putting those two 5 and 5 back to back is often really helpful because each time you do each part of it, you learn something about it.
And practicing the feedback is, I think, going to be useful for you as well. You'll find that there's something about hearing somebody repeat back what you said and knowing that they really listened that is like putting the cherry on top.
And another little tip here is if you have children or in-laws or other people in your family, they respond extremely well to this, having raised a number of teenage children. If you speak before you truly hear what they have to say, they're no longer listening to what you have to say. And I know any husband or wife or parent feels like they have exactly the right thing to say. But it's not so much what you say, it's when you say it. And if you say it first, no one's likely to listen to what you have to say.
So share this way of being with other couples, with your children, as Peter said, with other people in your family. And I think you'll find that your life works much more smoothly.
So we suggest that you think about the possibility of cooperating as a way of training yourself and being together. Start with a small project. Don't take on a really big one. And actually see how enjoyable it can be to work together. One of the things that we would do, for instance, is just a fun project, like cutting out pictures from a magazine and pasting them on a piece of cardboard, or doing a jigsaw puzzle, or taking something on big, like cleaning out a closet or a garage or something like that. But if you really get good at this, it starts to be fun. It's way more fun, think about it, to clean out the basement with someone else than doing it yourself. Not just because more people do the heavy lifting, but it's just way more fun.
So we hope that you'll try out some of these exercises, like the 5 and 5, and seeing what it's like to feedback what you heard. And let us know sometime how that is for you. We can be reached through our website, www.couplepower.com, or at my phone number, 434-971-4701. We'd love to hear from you.